It's Friday, the 13th of September, and this is the Monocle Minute today.
As of the last decade or so, since the war in Syria, Russia's become an influential player in the region. And anything of the sort of an annexing the West Bank would be catastrophic for Russia's long-term plans for the Middle East.
Israel's prime minister heads to Russia, but his plan to annex Palestinian territories is winning few friends. Plus, South Korea tries to force Japan to stop using its rising sun flag during next year's Olympics. Londoners take to the catwalk for the city's Fashion Week. And Monocle's Tom Edwards investigates the curious case of why celebrated footballers make such ugly statues. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Benjamin Netanyahu met with Vladimir Putin in Sochi, Russia, yesterday, just days ahead of elections back at home. In the week that the Israeli Prime Minister made a controversial promise to annex parts of the West Bank if he's re-elected, it's unsurprising that the topic shaped much of the discussion with his counterpart. Monocle's Mel Konchar-Choglian has been following the story. Mel, what do we know about what the pair discussed?
So one of the main overarching topics of the conversation was the annexation of the West Bank. Putin and the foreign ministry and the defense minister unequivocally shut down the idea and said that it would be very dangerous for the region for this to happen. Now, I know to international observers that might seem very ironic considering Russia's annexation of Crimea, but Russia is playing a very delicate role in mediating between the Arabs and the Israelis in the Middle East. As of the last decade or so, since the war in Syria, Russia's become an influential player in the region. And anything of the sort of an annexing the West Bank would be catastrophic for Russia's long-term plans for the Middle East.
So looking at that more deeply then, Mel, how does all of this factor into Moscow's longer-term plans in the Middle East?
Well, as I understand, a huge chunk of Israel's population is made up of people who are Russian or Jewish-Russian or were former citizens of the USSR. So whereas previously Russia supported the Arabs in the region, it now has much stronger ties to the Israelis due to this post-war boom in former Russian subjects in Israel. So they're trying to ensure that there's a dialogue between them. The long-term strategy for Russia is nothing other than relative stability. Now, that might seem very vague, but the issue is that there is simply no way of knowing what will happen in the Middle East. There's no way of projecting long-term plans. All you can do is sort of keep everything in check. And Netanyahu's huge Zionistic plans simply for the sake of getting re-elected put Russia's foreign policy in jeopardy. And of course, Russia, as any other country, thinks of its own interests before anyone else's, which is why it has shut down this idea.
Mel Konchar-Choglian, always a pleasure to get your insights. Thank you. South Korea is lobbying the IOC to forbid Japan from flying the rising sun flag during next year's Olympic Games. The striped variation on Japan's national flag was, throughout its several centuries of history, flown by the military of Imperial Japan during its rampages across the region in the first half of the 20th century. John Everard is a former British diplomat.
The rising sun flag in Japan just doesn't have the political echoes that it does outside that country. People have objected strenuously to Japanese ships flying the flag, and because it is, you know, the only flag that, you know, constitutionally they are supposed to fly, it means eventually that Japanese ships usually withdraw from exercises. There have been a few examples of this. It's unfortunate, but that's the way things are. On the other hand, in Korean eyes, the rising sun flag is the flag under which, you know, their women were abducted, turned into comfort women, their workers were taken away and turned into slave workers in Japanese factories, and under which the Japanese execution squads used to rampage through Seoul shooting people. So it does actually look very, very different. But of course, there's more to this than raw sentiment. We are looking at a South Korean president for whom everything is going wrong. His trademark North Korea policy is in tatters. You know, the North Koreans called him all kinds of rude things over the last few months and made clear that if he thought he was going to meet Kim Jong-un again, he'd have another thing coming. His management of the economy has been severely criticised. The South Korean economy is stalling badly, largely because of measures that he has introduced. And, well, he doesn't have much positive to show. So beating up nationalist sentiment and attacking the Japanese is always a pretty safe bet. Maybe his last big political card to play before the April elections, in which, if the polls are to be believed, he's going to go down very, very sharply.
The bravest and boldest of London's fashion world will be out in force today as the city's Fashion Week takes off. But this year's event isn't just about what we're wearing.
London Fashion Week kicks off today with a series of shows from emerging UK talent. The likes of Matty Bovan and Marta Jakubowski will be setting out to impress with their Spring-Summer 20 collections, while Monday sees the return of British behemoths Burberry and J.W. Anderson. But it's not just clothing in the spotlight this year. Louis Vuitton artistic director Virgil Abloh will be unveiling a collaboration with IKEA. Yet for all the hype, the storm clouds of Brexit are lurking nearby. Fashion Week generates over 112 million euros in clothes orders and relies on an international workforce that includes more than 10,000 European staff. Spring-Summer 21 might see more than just a change in trends.
And now before the final whistle today, some extra time with Monocle's Tom Edwards on why footballers seem to make such ugly statues.
Takes a deflection. It's into the path of Cristiano Ronaldo. Ronaldo turns into trouble. Brilliant footwork. Amazing goal for Cristiano Ronaldo.
For a pastime that bills itself the beautiful game, football sure does produce peerlessly ugly statues. This week we learnt that Swedish soccer's titan of immodesty, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, is to get the bronze treatment in his hometown of Malmö. So what should we expect? Well, if you look to Zlatan's rival in the pedigree footballer vanity showcase, Cristiano Ronaldo, disappointment surely awaits. Who can forget the bust of Portugal's finest revealed in Madeira in 2017? So offensive to the eyes was this monstrous maquette, his head looking like a cake left out in the rain, that it was rapidly replaced by a more classical piece that would have been more at home on the east pediment of the Parthenon. Meanwhile, David Beckham was cast for posterity in Los Angeles. That turned out more superannuated Clark Kent than Superman. George Best didn't fare much better either earlier this year when his likeness, and I use the term loosely, was revealed in Belfast. Fortunately for him, he wasn't alive to see it. And a statue of the great Diego Maradona, revealed in India in 2017, depicted him with a bouffon more befitting of an octogenarian grandma after a trip to the salon. It seems that the bigger the footballing talent and ego, the harder it is to capture in statuary. All eyes on Malmö next month then. Just don't expect to like, or even to recognise, what you see.
He buried the English defence. He picked up that ball 40 yards out.
That's all in today's programme. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute returns on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.